Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
You've waited all summer, and now fall is upon us to talk college football from the highest points in the country. Presented by the Far End of the Bench podcast and the Variety Sports Network. Your home for Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference football, featuring Jimmy Pilato and Rev the Problem Coca. Season 3 of Top of the Mountain podcast.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you guys for tuning in live here on the Far End of the Bench YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe while you're here. Leave a like, a comment. Chime in the comments, in the chat. If you guys are D2 football fans, or if you're starting to become D2 football fans because of this show, we appreciate it. Be sure to leave a follow at FEOTB Pod, and then you can follow Rev on social media at Rev Coca. We're back. We took a week off. I was getting ready for conferences last week. I told everybody on the far end of the bench that you can go back and listen to from yesterday. I finished conferences on Thursday, so I got a very minute amount of brain power left, and we decided to divert it onto the RMAC, because last week there was some big games that we couldn't go 2 weeks in a row without getting back together, and there was some movement. We finally have different standings other than just the alphabetical list that we were seeing early on in the season, and now this week marks a month in. Basically, at a month in, you know if this is legitimate or if this is a fantasy. Rev, let's bring you back here, and thank you for we're back here, coming back and recording, being live. I know you caught a couple of the games last week, but how have you felt about the season so far? I know that we've been keeping up a little bit more than we had since we graduated, but how have you thought about this RMAC season so far?
All right. Well, first off, it's just good to get refreshed after, you know, taking that week off, you know, you and your teacher duties and conferences and dealing with talking with everyone's parents. Why does Bobby have a bad grade in this class? Yada, yada, yada. But it's good to be back, and, you know, taking that week off, it was definitely cool just to see the beginning of RMAC, to see how certain things shaked up. Like, maybe we didn't necessarily get a surprise from that Mines and Adams game, but to see certain performances, seeing, okay, how's Black Hill State going to look this week? Western and Pueblo, you know, how's that going to shake up? And you definitely got some questions answered in that first week of RMAC action. So it's cool to see things kick off from here.
Yeah, and before we get into the D2 college football, you guys can see the topics we're going to talk about. We're recapping the Black Hill State Shadron beatdown that was the CSU Pueblo Mines game from last weekend, and then we have a couple big matchups that we're going to preview and give predictions for. But I think we'd be remiss, especially because the RMAC does reside pretty much almost all in Colorado except for a few schools, you know, South Dakota Mines, Black Hills, Shadron being the few, New Mexico Highlands. But college football in Colorado was put on an absolute pedestal last Saturday. I'm sure you watched the game when Coach Prime and the Buffaloes were taking on the Rams of the Rocky Mountain Showdown. I thought that was just a huge moment because, A, it drew 9 million viewers. It's the fifth highest rated college football game that ESPN has ever put on in that time slot, just for a rinky-dink regional rivalry between Colorado and Colorado State. That turned out to be an absolute bar fight, and I just thought it was great for the exposure, and you and I are both Colorado athletes. We played majority of our careers here, and when we went to college in Colorado, I thought that was a really cool moment just to look at, be like, these guys are playing A, their hearts out for this title and the rivalry, B, this is the most amount of people that I think have ever stayed up this late, because it did go late. We ended at 12:30 our time, which was 2:30 East Coast, so I feel bad for the college football final guys, but it was a slobber knocker. It was a slugfest. Got overtime out of it, double overtime out of it, and CU comes out on top. What do you think about Saturday night?
So it felt like the best possible outcome turned out in this matchup, where a lot of people are seeing CU as heavy favorites, but CSU came out guns blazing, came out ready to swing, and even just the bad blood headed up to the game. And, well, I didn't necessarily love the, oh, I pull myself up on a bootstraps and I take off my hat and glasses when I talk to people. That's what mama taught me. And I thought it was kind of a corny thing to do, but it definitely brought some animosity to the rivalry. And even the game, just as intense as it was, just how high scoring. And there were even certain moments where it just felt like CSU's players had some bounties placed on CU's head on some of their players. And it got personal, it got chippy, but ultimately it brought out the best out of both teams. And yeah, CU's got a platform on them to the point where I feel like there's more buzz on CU right now than there is on the Broncos. The Nuggets just came off of a finals victory. And it feels like more people are talking about CU than that.
No, they are. They're on a huge like uptick right now. They had Big Noon Kickoff and College Game Day both in Boulder for the past weekend. The Rock was here. He came back to WWE for an appearance because they were having SmackDown in Colorado last Friday night. So it was the three big things happened for the program, and you mentioned it, but that was probably the best possible outcome. Nobody would have stayed. You're not tuning in. Probably it would have been a higher rated game than normal, but nobody's tuning in to watch Colorado beat CSU 55-20. And if you know anything about the rivalry, that's really not how that game goes. It's always close except for a handful of times. And the last time that one of the teams came in ranked in the top 25, CSU beat them. CU was ranked sixth in 2002, and Bradley Van Pelt and the CSU Rams wanted that rivalry bad enough. It was unfortunate, the situation with Henry Blackburn and Travis Hunter. You hate seeing a guy like Travis Hunter have that happen to him where he lacerates his liver and he's going to be out missing. He was becoming a superstar, and now we got to pause and hopefully he's able to come back. But the whole Henry Blackburn situation after the game where your phone number, your address, your parents' phone number, your parents' address are all leaked. I don't know how that gets leaked that quickly, where he was coming off the field and he didn't even know that was what was currently going on. But that was an unfortunate outcome, but it was handled in the correct way. Like Deion addressed it directly. Travis Hunter addressed it directly. There's no animosity or ill will. It was a hard play. It was dirty. It was definitely a penalty. Could have been warranted to kick Blackburn out of the game, but nothing happened. And that kind of ignited the fire under CU because CU was flat initially. They did not look good coming out of the gates in the Rocky Mountain Showdown, but they haven't looked good coming out of the gates in any of their games. So that's kind of par for the course for this Deion team, and now they get their first test in Oregon, in Eugene, and they're still 24-point favorites, or 24-point underdogs against Oregon.
Yeah, and it's only a bummer going back to the Blackburn and Travis Hunter situation. And, well, yeah, Sanders and Hunter definitely handled it pretty well, but, yeah, definitely a dirty play, but you don't want to see people being dogs, but, yeah, there's the nastiness of that issue, allegation of things Blackburn may have done in the past in high school. But regardless, Sanders and Hunter, they handled it pretty well. It's just a bummer that in this tough stretch, I believe we got Oregon, and then the week after next week is USC, that they may be entering those games without their best player and a pretty clear future top 10 pick in Travis Hunter.
And it could be on either side because he's just as deadly on offense as he is on defense, and it's going to be – killer when we play USC, when CU plays USC, because they have Jerry Rice's son over there in the receiving room, plus all their other dogs. Like Jerry Rice's son is fourth coming off the bench. That's how stacked USC is this year, getting ready to make the jump to the Big Ten in the upcoming season. Let's get into what we're all here for, what we all enjoy a little bit more because we have the personal ties. D2 football here in the RMAC. We're going to start with the players of the week from last week. So we have Offensive Player of the Week, Hassan Williams, senior wide receiver. Not only did the Yellow Jackets break records in their 55-19 win, he had 246 receiving yards, 4 touchdowns, and now holds the single-game program record for the Yellow Jackets. And he did that on 8 catches. So he was catching the ball, getting in space, finishing plays downfield. Hassan Williams, Offensive Player of the Week for Week 3 in the RMAC. That's some pretty impressive numbers. That's like Travis Kelce, Greg Kittle type numbers.
Yeah, they definitely just the Black Hills offense as a whole came out guns blazing last week. But big time game for Hassan Williams, where he finished up with 4 touchdowns in that game and just really, really exposing that Chatham State defense, in which has kind of been a little shaky so far this year, where that was kind of a strong point last year. But yeah, definitely a way for Black Hills State to get that first loss of the season in the rear view, showing that they're coming for that RMAC title. And so far, since that week one game, they've looked impressive. Their offense are firing off on all cylinders. And just to cap it off, that remarkable 200-plus yard game from Hassan Williams.
And I don't know your thoughts. We could probably talk about it a little bit more, but Black Hills always seems like when they're good, they're good seasons. They start off 5-6-7-0. And then after that, after their first loss, they can't come back from the adversity because they just kind of quit. So if they're able to bounce back from losses, that was kind of what they were missing in the Yellow Jackets program. Hassan Williams, big day. Colorado Mesa has the defensive player of the week, Jason Thorne, true freshman out of Arvada, Colorado. He helped the road win last week. He intercepted three passes against the Hard Rockers, registered one tackle, and added in a PBU. Mavs won 38-30 over South Dakota Mines, who Rev and I talked about in the last episode that we had, could possibly looking at challenging Colorado Mines for the conference title. But this is the crazy thing about the RMAC season. Pretty much certain schools can beat other schools at all times. Everybody beats Fort Lewis, but there's certain rivalries, certain matchups where you know one team is going to come out on top, kind of like the NFC West, where one coach always beats the other. So it's interesting that Mesa was able to pull off that big of an upset. Mesa did it a couple of years ago when they upset Colorado Mines on their huge winning streak and stopped them from having a perfect season. But that was a huge game for Jason Thorne, and the Mavericks seem to be finally in that stage because they were down for a little bit, and now they're recruiting. They have this true freshman from Colorado, and he's making his presence felt on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of a frisky side to Colorado Mesa where, yeah, there's young talent, and they have bits and pieces of a passing game here and there. It's still a team that's in the rebuilding phase, but you can tell their defense gets after it. It caused lots of turnovers. Even a special teams unit is very dynamic, especially in a return game, but definitely a big game for Jason Thorne. And, yeah, it's definitely highlighting some of that young talent in Mesa here, which I still think they're a little bit of a ways away, but they're frisky, you know. They're a feisty little team over there.
Yeah, sorry, Jason Thorne. I was misreading that on the website. And then lastly, special teams player of the week, Cash Bradley, another player from Colorado Mesa, sophomore out of Bushland, Texas. He helped out for the consecutive road wins. And let's see, finished the game with 169 return yards, highlighted by the 100-yard kickoff return to the house in the opening quarter. Returner was the Mavs first for a touchdown since November 2nd, 2019. Bradley also tackled on a 50-yard punt return that set up a two-play, tacked on a 50-yard punt return that set up a two-play touchdown drive. So he's giving the Mavericks short fields. And with the lack of explosivity that their offense has shown in the past few years, if you can start off plus 30, plus if you could start off at your own minus 35, that's like a great setup. You should have points no matter what in college football at any level. If you can start on the 50-yard line, 40-yard line, now you're talking about if we don't make a touchdown on this drive, that's going to be a missed opportunity. And if the Mavericks have that going for them, along with a huge defensive presence like we saw in the last couple of weeks, they're still scoring 30-plus points a game. They can still score. It's not like they don't have any offensive firepower. I agree with you. They're starting to maneuver themselves towards Frisky. Maybe they're going to flip my because I think I picked Pueblo to be third. Maybe they flip with Pueblo because after what Pueblo did the last couple of weeks, I'm struggling to see it, Rev. That's where I sit with the Thunderwolves out there in Pueblo.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of a question there as to, yeah, they have some talent, but it's definitely a newer, different Pueblo identity from the guys that they used to be when, you know, with the Brandon Payer, Deion Sizer days and the Michael Riston days. So it's definitely a bit of a flip there, but this Mesa game definitely shows the importance of a good special teams unit when it comes to flipping the field position. I know you remember during our days at Western, you know, just how Coach Van Grobel just hammered down the importance of special teams units when it comes to starting field position, flipping the field, dynamic plays that can ultimately change the outcome of a game. And with Mesa and their special teams unit, it definitely helped them pull off a hard win. And for whatever reason, it just seems very often that whenever South Dakota Mines and Mesa pairs together, they're always these high scoring, just wild affairs where at least 60 points are going to be combined between the both of them. Those games just tend to get wild.
Yeah, let's before we get into the games that we're specifically going to recap, just to look back at the scoreboard so everybody's up to date. Last week during week three, Highlands beat Fort Lewis, adds to Fort Lewis's losing streak. That's now, it's October 5th, 2019. We did the math on the days.
Jesus. At least it looks somewhat competitive now, but yeah, at least compared
31-17, to 31-17, and that's looking competitive. That's all you need to know about this Fort Lewis program right now. They have nice powder blue uniforms. They got new uniforms recently, but really, it's a bad stretch for them. Adams loses to Colorado Mines, who's still ranked number two in the country, 70-7. That was an absolute statement out in Golden from the Ore Diggers, who now get to turn around and make another statement this time on the road, which we'll talk about. That's one of our preview games. Mesa beat South Dakota Mines 38-30 in Rapid City. Western takes down Pueblo. That game's supposed to be taking place in Gunnison this year, but with the stadium not being filled, they gave it back to Pueblo. Mountaineers still walk away with 30-14 victory. And the final game of the weekend, Black Hills, which is going to be our first recap, 55, Shadron State, the Eagles now fall to 1-2 on the season after that big win week one. They have yet to put it together, and not only are they not putting it together, but it's getting uglier as we go on. So 55-19, the final score, as I'm looking here. Black Hills, Tanner Clarkson threw for 343 yards. Nolan Susil ran for 138. We talked about Hassan Williams had 246 receiving yards. You are losing the game at all three levels of your defense. So we can talk about how the offense only scored 19 points, but your defense needs to be brought out to the carpet. Let's bring it out to the table. Let's be open and honest about it. I have family that are on Shadron, so I don't want this to come off as sounding harsh. But for the last two seasons, you have been a talented enough team that 2 years ago you were picked to finish top four in the RMAC in the third spot, and you come out and you lose all of your second half leads. You have a 14-point lead against Angelo State at home. Can't hold on to that. Last season, another disappointment. Now this year you start off 1-2, and a team that you normally have the ability to beat in Black Hills not only beats you, but absolutely clobbers you 55-19 and puts up record-breaking performances in the air, on the ground, and in the passing game, in the receiving game. So what is the exact issue that we're seeing with Shadron State right now?
At this point, it just seems like a team that has a lot of mental lapses, whereas certain teams just need to learn how to win, where it just comes from a tradition and a culture of doing it, where Shadron used to be that winning team, but now you have a group of young, talented guys just don't know how to do it, because there's always that stretch in the game where perhaps it's very tight and very close, where both teams are tired. But that's when you lock in, when both teams are tired, and just be able to stay focused and execute during those key moments. This wasn't necessarily a close game for Shadron, but that kind of seems to be the issue most of the time. And now they're losing the teams, like you said, that they normally beat. And well, it was a good game from Hunter O'Connor, who's coming off that all RMAC season last year, coming in with, I believe, 7 tackles and 1 sack in this game. But besides that, they mostly got thrashed and dominated on all levels of their defense. Like, just the story just shows in the amount of yards they gave up, 556 yards of total offense. And I know total yards doesn't always tell the story, but that right there told the story of what happened in the game.
And you do that too when you have over 200 yards passing yourself. You had over 100 rushing yards. I was looking at the team comparison here, and if we just go based on total yards gained, normally a 335-yard day means that you have some success. But it's not when you still give up over 220 yards more to the opposing team. I'm looking at it here. I know it's weird. It's a lot of, you know, everybody had a great day. It's hard that they picked Hassan Williams, maybe because he broke the record. But Tanner Clarkson, 18-24, 343 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. He was sacked twice. That's huge.
Nolan Susil there too. Yeah.
Yeah. Nolan Susil was 16 carries, 138 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Tanner Clarkson had a rushing touchdown, like you just mentioned, 41 yards rushing. You could not stop a cold in this game. And I get Black Hills is built on their offense. They're built around their offense, but it's not – they haven't proven to be a premier offense in the conference. I would say they're above-average offense. They can always score, but they're not like – I would say South Dakota Mines has been an explosive offense ever since they came into the conference. Black Hills is up and down. Some games they can score a lot. Some games they don't. But that's not – it's not like you're giving that up to Mines. So I think Shadron has a whole lot of soul-searching to do. And they're going to go out this weekend. They're hosting Western in Shadron in Nebraska. So you got Western going on an 8-hour bus trip. You're going to hopefully catch them with that fatigue. I will tell you, you know, we went out there a couple times. I think we won one, lost one when we were traveling out there. Well, we were in Western. It's a difficult bus ride, but it's not the worst one in the world. The South Dakota bus rides, the Idaho bus rides are way worse.
No doubt.
That's if this is not a bounce back, if you don't at least look competent and give what's now a top three team in the RMAC that's been solidified with what they did, and we're going to talk about their game next. If you don't make a good statement against Western, this is going to be just another forgotten season. You're just going to waste another year of all this talent. You got so many guys that are considered for all conference, but you can't ever get them there because your team just can't win. You have that you have an allergy to winning, it seems like. Not quite as bad as Fort Lewis, but it is an allergy, and it's pretty bad because you give up leads when you do it.
And it's really going to come down to this game against Western, showing that they have the coaching ability to match up schematically with these people, as well as just an overall level of mental toughness and fortitude that they haven't been able to show lately in these last couple of seasons. Because while Western, of course, is winning, I wouldn't necessarily say they're the most talented team in the RMAC. It's just very well coached, very well disciplined. You've had a coach that has stayed there forever, despite criticisms of so many people over the years saying they need to be fired. But regardless, they've gotten everything together. They all seem to buy into what he's saying. The coaches, the defensive coordinator, Coach Auer being there, we've talked about them enough here to the point where they're not the most physically talented team, but they play underneath the system so well. So in order for Shatterin to win, there has to be that level of buy-in on their end too, or to at least be competitive, because it just seems like the one thing that separates a team from like Western or Black Hills compared to a team like Shatterin is just their ability to buy into a system and to stay locked in mentally.
Yeah, and funny enough too, those three coaches, the three coordinators, the head coach and the two coordinators, Baines, Auer, and now McLean, are all three Shatterin guys. Like, McLean had all the passing records for Shatterin. Baines was a coach there for a long time, and Auer used to be the head coach at Shatterin. So now they're going up against a very familiar opponent, and they should know from experience, because this is how that Western – this Western team that we've been watching these past few weeks are built just like those old Shatterin teams that were always competing for conference titles. They are to the letter. They know exactly what they're going to be doing. They know exactly where they need to be, and it's never going to be super flashy. Like a 30-14 win, that's dominant, but that was a – that's a workman's mentality. So we're transitioning over to this game. Pueblo had the explosive return, so you don't like to give up those big explosive plays. But we always talked about, was it the seven critical situations? That's what we would start every Monday meeting off with from the last game, like turnovers, turnover battle, compete zone, all of that kind of stuff. Western did everything that they needed to, except for that one couple explosive plays where Pueblo got loose and got in the end zone. 30-14 to me is just as impressive as the 55-19 score that we saw in our other game. Like Western was right there. It's such a machine now. It's funny to think back about our 1-11 and 2-10 debacles. Like, I wish I was a little bit younger. I wish I was part of this generation. I'm good with being a part of the foundation generation, but that was tough.
Yeah, well, it was good during our last year to see some of that turnaround when McLean came in that last year. Yeah, it definitely would have been nice to come around, maybe endure that little COVID 2020 period and just have been able to see what would have happened on the other end. But yeah, you made the good point of just Pueblo mostly being shut down by Western. And while Chance Fuller and that Pueblo offense did have moments of explosivity, you know, their offense is definitely renovated now. They have an explosive passing game. It's going to happen. But besides those moments, you can just look at Fuller's completion percentage of the game. Like, it was just a headache of a matchup for him. And Western just slowed him down slowed Pueblo's offense down. And then on the other side, they just chipped away. They played pretty consistent. They played these nothing extremely explosive or over the top, but when it was time to execute on those third downs, those short yards opportunities, Davon Butler was punching in those goal line touchdowns, and they executed when they needed to. So it was just a very well-disciplined game from a team full of disciplined coaches in Western.
And Nash Drew, looking at his stat line, it's not the most impressive. He's a young quarterback. He's getting his feet wet. 17 of 31 for 195, no touchdowns. He did have a rushing touchdown. The big thing, which is what caused those debacle seasons, because our quarterbacks would try and force stuff and throw bad interceptions. When you're not turning the ball over, you give yourself such a better advantage. If you end every series with a kick, whether that be the PAT, whether that be a field goal, whether that be a punt, anything, if you give the ball back from a kick, you give yourself a chance. With the defense and the system that is now set in stone in Gunnison, if you don't give them short fields, if you don't give up these weird explosive plays and explosive situations, the sudden change situations, this should be the outcome of a lot. Like, the offense doesn't have to get going right away. It would be nice to score a lot of points, but if you can just get that thing warmed up in the first quarter, continue to play solid football with no turnovers, little penalties, but your defense deserves the credit in this one, because as I'm looking here, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 people with over 4 tackles. If you add in the guys with 4, that brings it up to 7 with a total of 4. And then it seems like damn near everybody got a tackle on the roster. It's led by Tony Cass and Sanchez Maxwell, but you know, Malcolm Wesley still contributing. Wyatt Burr is the senior captain now. We remember him when he came in as like the weirdest, wildest pup freshman out of the Western Slope, but now he's a totally changed man and like leads that defense. The question 2 years ago was, how does Western replace Lane Ferris? And then this year it was kind of, how do they place Will Lytle? And they're still missing Lane, but Wyatt stepped in. Like Burr has held down that level of the defense because Auer wins his defensive schemes with his front seven. If the D-line and the linebackers are doing what they need to, if they're flying around, they're making tackles, and the defensive line hasn't really lost a step, like that's where the consistency of coaching comes in. So while it might have seemed easier at certain points, and I know that there's probably quite a few Western people and Western alumni listening to this that might have said at one point that the coaching staff needed to change, it seems to have turned the corner and we did the right thing, like waiting that long period and struggling and figuring out how to – you had to get the right guys in place. You had to get guys in place that weren't just going to go willy-nilly. We had three offensive line coaches in 4 years. I think it was four in the last six. That's basically the only position you have turnover in, and it's showing because that we used to dream about doing that to Pueblo. We used to, you know, I think Case's offensive game plan meeting ended with, hopefully we have the ball for long enough that they don't score that many points and we'll be able to win it with a field goal at the end. I was like, that's our strategy? Our strategy? Hope? That's not a good strategy. We got to figure something out. And now they have.
Yeah. It just always came down to find the right recipe where for so long it just felt like, you know, Baines is there and he teaches a lot of discipline and structure into the team, but the right coaching staff just didn't always seem to be there. Or there was that one season in 2016 where maybe there were some holes here and there in the coaching staff, but, you know, we had the game breaker, Nelson Eckler, to kind of help things whenever things got a little muddy. And now just – seems like we're a well-oiled machine with the right coaches and the right coordinators, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. And everything, the train is on the tracks. And it's crazy to see now that we're tied for first place in the RMAC simply because our coaches, our players have bought in and we have the right coaches around.
Who was the offensive line coach before Dooley? Were you there? Who, you remember that guy? He went to
– He was Haddon.
Yeah, he's back. That's been because my parents were out there and they kind of got in on both sides because my sister has the ties to Pueblo and she gets kind of the run of the stadium on Saturdays, but they were hanging out with the Western alum because my dad was there and he was saying that Haddon's back and they've recruited really well. All these videos that I see, like this, it used to look like we were kind of Gunnison High School adjacent. We were the little guys, like you and I, we could play at that level being as small as we are. I have to tell you this story because you'll get a kick out of this. We have a new kid on my tackle team. He's 12 years old, and he is 6 foot and 260 pounds. He's a big – from the island, so it makes sense. But, like, I shake his hand, and he's literally – it's like kind of looking in a mirror. Obviously, we don't look the same, but he's just so big and round already. He wears a size 15 shoe, and he's 12. I just like, but that's huge because Western now has that kind of physicality to compete with all of these schools because that's always been our downfall. Maybe we were faster, we were more disciplined, but we just weren't as big. Mines' offensive line was always too big for our D line, and now we've been able to develop that position group. And Van Grohl's done a great job. Auer's done a great job with that defense, holding Pueblo to 14 points used to be. How are we going to do that? This defense has figured it out. Like that was textbook from them.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Cools for them, man. I'm just happy to see it. Bring on Shattering.
Bring on Shattering. I'm glad they're going out there because they're going to get comedy movies on the way home. You know that's what they're searching for. 8-hour bus ride on the defensive bus with Coach Auer. You got to end with a win so you can watch some comedies on the way home. Otherwise, he's just turning on. What was the popular choices there, Rev, for the bus ride back? Rain of Fire, that stupid Matthew McConaughey dragon movie.
Oh, goodness.
That one got played quite a bit. There was that one time where we were driving up to South Dakota, and it was pitch black because it was after daylight savings, and we were watching, like, The Hitcher. And I woke up from my nap, and a guy was getting pulled apart by two semi-trucks. I was like, what are we watching here? Why is this what we have on we still have like 8 hours to go in the drive. Let's turn something else on. I want to laugh. I want to be like, I don't want to be scarred for life. Let's move to our previews and predictions. First one up, Black Hills and Mesa meeting for this time at 2-1. When we talk about the standings, this is going to be a game where one of these teams moves up and one of these teams moves down in the standings. It is in Grand Junction. So Black Hills is going on the 10 to 12 hour bus ride to get to Grand Junction. Colorado Mesa, I thought that they were going to struggle. They lost to Texas A&M and Kingsville by 20 and then pulled out the victory over a D1AA school in the University of San Diego. It took them overtime. And then last week, 38-30 victory over South Dakota Mines. You finally go back home. You've been able to win your two road games. You're in a better position than you thought you were going to be. Here's my question. Who's this game more important for? Is it more important for Black Hills to go 3-1, or is it better for Colorado Mesa to just, if they found some momentum, you got to ride out that momentum because you never know when it's going to die out?
Well, simply when it comes to the older, more developed team right now, I think it's more important for Black Hills to win right now, as and they're a little bit, whereas last year they kind of started off the season really competitive in the RMAC, it kind of sputtered out. This year they got a lot of those players back, and it's kind of right now, let's see what we got. Whereas Mesa is still kind of building up, and they got good young talent. So I feel like it's a little bit more important for Black Hills when it comes to the older, more experienced team that's trying to take that title right now.
I think that there's an argument to be made because Colorado Mesa used to be the one of the better programs, top two. They were basically right behind Pueblo, and now they haven't been for a long time. You've been starving this fan base for a winner. I can see the fans probably in Grand Junction because that is a big deal out there. That's like the biggest thing that they get to do. It's Fruit of Monument games, and then it's Colorado Mesa games over at Stalker Stadium. Those are the two main things to do in the town. They want this thing to be good so badly. I think the fans of Colorado Mesa might be expecting a little bit more. But to me, I agree with you. Black Hills, this is their season to show what are you actually going to do. And if you can come in and beat a solid program, it's not an easy thing to do winning in Grand Junction for any of these RMAC teams. We had a 21-year period where we didn't win in Grand Junction when we went out there and played until our senior season when we kicked the field goal to beat them. So this is a huge opportunity for Black Hills, I think, to take a step up. But, you know, Colorado Mesa's fan base, they've been fickle with these coaches the last few years. Like, they're just ready to – next – somebody else give us a winner. Like, that's not how this works. You have to build a program. You can't build a program every 6 months before in spring ball and expect it to be good. You got to give it some time to cook.
Yeah, you can tell those guys are passionate about their football over there. So sometimes it may be premature decisions. Sometimes it's just a short leash because someone's not getting it done. But, of course, Mesa, just whether you just look at the people inside the organization or even just a fan base, I know you remember those games at Grand Junction. Like, those fans will get rowdy. Like, you can hear them talking while you're on the sidelines. Like, they'll talk to you, they'll throw stuff at you. Like, it's a very rowdy environment. As for what I think is going to happen for this game, I really just want to see whether or not that Black Hills offense is like legit or if it's just kind of a one-time thing, like exploiting Shattering State, because they look like a very — it just felt like a very balanced offense where you got a lot done from the running game, a lot done from the passing game. And I think that's going to be the deciding factor when it comes to Black Hill State winning a very tough road game against a very hostile environment. I just think their offense and its well-roundedness is just going to be enough to edge out Mesa and what they got on the other side of the ball.
And if you look at it too, if they can somehow win at Grand Junction, because – They're 1-1 on the road so far. So they've gone to St. Paul. They've gone to Missouri to face Southwest Baptist. They're trying to, in my mind, that schedule screams, if we can somehow be in the position to make a playoff run, these are the games where the committee would look back and go, okay, they were able to beat Southwest Baptist on the road. They were able to beat Mesa on the road. You're going to play Western Colorado in a couple weeks, and – you know, if you can pull out three or four big victories, you keep your record up around 8-2, 9-2, 8-3, you could be in the mix for a shot at one of those lower seeds in the region. And it takes you getting there before you can actually win. Do I expect them to go anywhere if they make the playoffs? Probably not, because teams know how to do that, and it'd be a totally new experience. But you have to get to the dance. That's what I was talking about with Western that 2 years ago when they ended up losing to Kearney. You have to get to the dance before you can expect anything out of it. So whether they won, they lost that game, it was no big deal because they finally got there. They finally got themselves back to that level. So Black Hills, if they take that step, if they prove that this is going to be the year they can win on the road and keep their record looking good for the playoff committee, who knows? You're able to upset Western Colorado, you turn around, you have Colorado Mines at your place the next week. You're looking at a possible 7-1 start and a share for the RMAC lead if things go well, if this is a magical season for Black Hills. So it is very important for the Yellow Jackets. I think that they're going to put out their best effort. Prediction, who are you going with here?
Yeah, I think I kind of hinted towards it before where I got Black Hills State winning the tough matchup against the road. I like what they showed on the offensive side of the ball, but yeah, the question is still there as to whether or not they can sustain it. As for Mesa on their side, Keenan Brown so far has been their most productive offensive player at receiver. I still feel like they're putting the pieces together on offense, whereas they're relying on the return game of Cash Bradley and disruptiveness and Jason Tom, who I don't know if it's Tom or Tom, but with what he's been doing in the defensive backfield, making turnovers and critical plays that offense can capitalize off of, I still just feel like Black Hills State brings too much on the offensive side of the ball and ultimately will edge it out in a tough crowd.
I think this one is going to be close. I think that it's going to be so close that Mesa is going to have a chance to continue their winning streak. Both teams are on a streak right now. Who's going to get to 3-0 in the last 3 weeks? And Colorado Mesa, because I think Black Hills is a little bit more likely to make a mistake, cause a turnover, give up a big return, which is deadly against Colorado Mesa. We have to make sure that you're on your P's and Q's for every single play. There's not a second. There's no let-up plays. Normally you have one or two situations where you're like, okay, we cannot give up a touchdown here so we can kind of relax. You can't relax against Colorado Mesa. I'm going to go against you. I'll say Colorado Mesa picks up the victory. I think it's going to be close either way, but I think that Black Hills, they have to prove it to me. So if they prove it to me this weekend and get a huge win in Grand Junction, then I will be able to fully stand behind the Yellow Jackets as one of those teams that could be a top three spot in the RMAC at the end of the season. Preview for this matchup that we have here on the screen. What was at one point probably in the offseason considered to be a deciding factor as to which way the RMAC title was going to go towards the end of the season, these two teams could not be in more different positions. So if we were to have the episode last week, we could have given flowers to the CSU Pueblo Thunderwolves because they went out to Allendale, Michigan in a very hostile environment. It's a long trip. I know because Roxy was the one that was planning it, so she let me in on all the details. I picked her up on Sunday from the airport when they finally got back. We could have given them their flowers because you pushed Grand Valley State, who's the number four team in the country, after they came back pissed off that they lost to Colorado Mines. You got a pissed off Grand Valley State team and you played them beautifully to the letter. You gave yourself every chance to win, double overtime, doesn't go your way. You could be happy with that. 1-1 with a tough loss to Grand Valley is better than 1-1, you know, what everybody expected. 1-1 and they get absolutely trounced by one of the top programs in D2 football. Unfortunately, like we mentioned already, we talked about their game. They couldn't even score more than 14 points on Western. And we both love Western. We think that they can give Mines a great game. But if you can't figure out that system, you're going up against the system school in the RMAC. Offense and defense. They've had their system in place through four different coaching regimes. They've been to the playoffs the last 5 years, I'm pretty sure it is. They've been to the semifinals 2 years ago. They went to the college national championship last year. You are not in a good situation if you can't figure out some team system. If they run the same thing over and over again, you should probably try and figure out how you're going to do that. And now you're hosting the number two team in the country. It's your place in front of your fans. And if it doesn't go well, oh my goodness. We talked about the fans in Grand Junction being into their football. Those fans in Pueblo love the Thunderwolves.
They got a tradition there.
They have pride and tradition since they brought that program back. And if you are going to sully that name, I would be very nervous if I was Coach V Hill, if Colorado Mines comes in and beats you 70-7 like they just put up in Alamosa. That cannot happen. It has to be one of those Grand Valley type performances. And I don't know how they're going to respond from last week because that was tough. That would be hard. You got body blowed to death against Western Colorado, 30-14. Couldn't really do anything. We got beat up. And now we turn around and play the number one team in the conference and has been the number one team in the conference for the past 5 years. Good luck to us. This does not bode well for CSU Pueblo.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Pueblo's going to need that luck here. And, yeah, I think how they respond from last week is really going to say a lot for where this team is going for the rest of the season. A key matchup that I see here is, well, Pueblo's, they got their passing game, but it can be disrupted. It can be neutered, as we saw last week. But I think the matchup here is, how is Pueblo's offensive tackles going to hold up against the guys that Colorado Mines have on the other side of the ball, with Jaden Healy and Nolan Reeve both having, I think, two or three sacks apiece. And that's going to be a determining factor, because the passing game can be good when everything is lined up into place. But what happens when you have either one of those guys, they're going to have a helmet in Fuller's face the entire game? Like, can they keep Fuller upright? Can they keep the pocket clean and allow him to potentially show some holes and potentially dissect Mines' offense a little bit? It's really going to come down to that pass rushing battle with some very proven guys over there in Colorado Mines over the years.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out if I can figure out how many times they've been sacked. Passing. No, it's not there.
I don't know if it was a heavy sack performance from Western, but just more so good, you know.
Yeah, they're even in their win. So they come out first week and they're playing a Lone Star opponent, which we talked about, in Midwestern State, and they get a big win, 37-8. But even when you win 37-8, they have a huge hole in their offensive line. It's not anybody, one person consistently. But every single play that I watched, there was at least one, possibly two guys going the other direction. So I don't know if they don't understand the plays that they're trying to run, because it is a new system and a new coaching staff. I don't know if they're just not getting it and they just can't get on the same page. Maybe it's a consistency thing. Maybe it's they don't really trust each other. But it's concerning, because this is the game where that's not going to be. If you go two opposite directions against Colorado Mines, that's a tackle for loss. There's no other outcome that happens, unless your running back makes five guys miss in the backfield, because as soon as they see their offensive lineman go opposite ways, that linebacker shoots the hole and he's in the running back's face before he gets the handoff.
Yeah, and that used to be something that was so reliable with this Pueblo unit. Whether or not they had the most talented skill position players, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you could at least rely on both their offensive and defensive line to just kind of control and dictate the line of scrimmage. And right now, during this rebuild, they've developed a passing game they never had before, but it just doesn't seem like they're as dominant when it comes to the front, offensively and defensively. That's where they're restocking right now.
Yeah, no, I still remember getting thrown in to play center against Deion Sizer, who has arms that were longer than my legs at the time. So even if I had really good technique, I couldn't touch him, because he'd literally big brothered me, like put a hand in my face. He's like, no, yeah. Okay, bye. I'm going to make a tackle.
Currently here he is. Where is he? I think he's playing the USFL right now.
Yeah, I think he had a tryout at the rookie mini camp his first year out of college. Yeah, he's been trying to do some stuff with – yeah, he had a tryout with the Broncos, and now, you know, I think the USFL is cool, because I don't know if you saw, there's some guy in Miami trying to apply for a ninth year of NCAA eligibility. I was like, dude, yeah. Just move on to the USFL. But you probably can't make the jump because you've been playing college football for a decade. You probably can't make the jump to the NFL because your body's worn down, but you can play in the USFL. It's still a paycheck. You still get to be on TV. You still get to play the game.
Hopefully he gets his doctorate out of staying there for so long.
9 years? I don't know what degree takes 9 years. That's like a doctorate and two masters. You should be you should be set for life getting three degrees from the University of Miami. What the hell? Why are you still here? You're 30. You're 30. Go home. I don't think I have to ask you your prediction, and I'm not going to go against you. You have Mines winning this game in Pueblo?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's too much of an uphill battle for Pueblo at this point. And Mines is just a well-oiled machine.
It's a fair point. It's a fair statement, especially after what we saw. Like I said, apologies to the Pueblo fans because we couldn't give you your proper kudos. We tried to in this episode, but unfortunately you followed up that kudos with a big pile of doo-doo. So we're gonna call it how it is in that week, and we're not going to give anybody a break. I gave crap to Shadron for not being able to finish. I've given crap to Black Hills for not being able to finish. You just get added to that list now, Pueblo. If you can prove me wrong this week, that's great, but I'm not backing down from anything that I said. I think everything that the both of us have said is fair, because this is not the same team that we used to see.
Yeah, so we're only really giving craps to the team that we have expectation for, who have done things traditionally in the past. Whereas, yeah, Shattering and Pueblo, it's clear that they're not the teams that they used to be. Fort Lewis is kind of a waste of time to crap on them too much, but at the very least, they're being competitive. Adams State, you know, they're going to drop points on the teams that perhaps are a little weaker, but obviously once it's time to play the creme de la creme of the RMAC, what's going to happen is going to happen. We haven't said much about Highlands, but hey, they're kind of sneaking in there. They're pulling off their victories. I think they're sitting at 2-1 at the moment. So yeah, Good for them. Let's see if they can keep that up.
That would be interesting if they're able to stay up there. And it's a good segue to get into. We're going to look at the standings ahead of week 4. Like we said, month in, you basically have your contenders, your pretenders, and your, oh my goodness, can we please get these guys a win so we don't have to mention the almost 2,000-day streak that they're currently on. We've lost, but I never lost that much. I always at least won a game a season. I've never gone winless in my life, which I should probably knock on wood because I really don't want to. I would be a nightmare. Looking at the standings here, Colorado School of Mines, Western Colorado, both tied for the lead in the RMAC, both undefeated. Obviously, the nod is going to go to Colorado School of Mines, not just based on the alphabet, but they are the number 2 team in the D2 RMAC rankings. And Rev, let's give your thoughts on just those top two, and I'm going to look up the D2 football stats so we can see. I think Western, they were in the top 25 going into last week, so I'm going to try and pull up and see where they are for this week. What do you think about those two? Are they the real contenders so far? They're not. You don't see any kind of pretender bubble on those two?
I'm really just interested in seeing how Western handles some of these matches where I haven't fully given up on South Dakota Mines. Colorado Mesa is looking like they got young youthful energy around there. And, of course, you have to bring up Black Hill State as well. I don't think Highlands keeps it up. So I still have questions as to whether or not Western is a clear second-place team this year, whereas it's pretty obvious who Colorado Mines is at this point.
Yeah, no, as I'm looking at it here from our former the website that we used to be produced through, but now we're on our own under the far end of the bench. Western jumped from not ranked last week to now 3-0, and they are ranked in the top 20. They're the 20th ranked team. They're ahead of A&M Kingsville and Angelo State. Angelo State sitting at 1-2 on this season, so they have to turn themselves around in a hurry. But Western Colorado now added themselves to the list of teams ranked in the national top 25 in the RMAC, so as much as they still need to continue to prove it, and you cannot start reading your press clippings at any point because it's hard for me to see. I know Colorado Mines has done it before, but it's hard for me to see which team is going to trip them up towards the end of the season. So you have to be on your P's and Q's, play as good a football as you can be to go into that game, which I think is not this weekend, but I think it might be next weekend or the following week. Let's see. I have the ability to look up the schedule, so I should probably just do that. Let's see. Western and Colorado Mines.
Week after, and yeah, bring on the South Dakota teams after Mesa. So, yeah, it's really going to pick up. They have some offensive-oriented teams, being a team in Western that's very focused on shutting teams down defensively and doing just enough on the offensive side of the ball. So, ooh, it's really going to be
an October game.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting because they're both going to be like 6-7-0 if things continue to go well for them. We don't have an RMAC conference title game, but if that's the case, that would be considered your RMAC conference title game at that point. Right. And I might have to find a way to get out of my obligations to be able to go down there for that. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Wherever it is. I'm sorry. I'm getting you off topic. I know.
No, that's fine.
Ooh, it's in Golden. So we don't even have to take.
Oh yeah. I'm definitely, I scheduled that day off from work. I'm going to that one.
I will be right there with you. We'll go to the beer garden, hang out with the old Western alumni because, I really hope that now. I know that we're supposed to be unbiased because we're technically internet journalists on D2 football, but that would be so awesome if it's undefeated Western versus undefeated Colorado Mines at that stadium.
Whew. I don't want to give predictions once that show comes. Let's just watch the game here. Like, you know who we're rooting for.
Yeah,
exactly. We know who the favorites are, but you know who we're rooting for. It's like a heart pick and a brain pick when it comes to games like that. But,
yeah. I don't know if you still listen to Brendan Shaw, but he always talks about that. He's like, I'm buddies with him, so don't listen to me on this pick, but I'm going to pick him. That's my heart pick. Don't listen to that. Pick the opposite of what I feel in my heart. because what I feel in my heart is only true to me, and it may or may not work out. But that is now I'm really excited. But I didn't think that I was going to get that giddy about something. But those are the top two teams. After that, Black Hills undefeated in the conference, Colorado Mesa undefeated in the conference, New Mexico Highlands undefeated in the conference. Those three teams are sitting at 2-1. So that's your 3-4-5 right there. The middle teams, I know we already mentioned Highlands being kind of a surprise, and Black Hills and Colorado Mesa, we're going to have a true number three at the end of this weekend. Since we didn't give New Mexico Highlands that much of a segment on this show, do you see them being able to hold down that three spot and making it legit?
It's very hard to see so, whereas I feel like now in the recent years, Highlands have done a better job trying to keep people around and trying to keep a culture, something that they've always struggled to do. But so far, their wins are against, I believe week two was a win against Western New Mexico. And all I remember is two seasons ago when Western played them and absolutely thrashed them, and then a win against Fort Lewis. So it's hard to necessarily take away exactly what that means. So it's kind of easy to see them falling, but hey, they're beating the teams that they're supposed to beat. So kudos to them.
Yeah, and like we said, they're taking on South Dakota Mines. So if you're going to prove that you are going to be in this spot in the conference, beating South Dakota Mines goes a long way, because that's not an easy victory anymore. After that, we have Adams, Chadron, CSU Pueblo, South Dakota Mines, and Fort Lewis. They're all 0-1 in the conference. Everybody except Fort Lewis is 1-2, like we mentioned. That losing streak, it's just sad to talk about at this point. Well, if it ever gets up to 1,500 days, or if it gets to like 2,000 days, we'll continue to talk about it. But honestly, even though I don't really care for Durango, it's a cool city. I didn't like the drive out there. They just don't deserve that. That's another town where it's like so small that you love the Friday night football and you would hope that your Saturday football with your college would be somewhat competitive. And like we're saying, competitive now is 35-17 for your team. So we got to figure, hopefully they keep a coaching staff. Hopefully they're able to establish a culture. I don't know when. I really have a hard time. When does that athletic director take a look at, okay, maybe we need to go NAIA for a season, or maybe we need to take another year off and bolster the program, but we can't continue to just go 0-11 every season.
Yeah. For now, it's just small steps and just, hey, look at the bright side. They're like somewhat competing. You know, the last 2 weeks they didn't necessarily get blown out of the water. So You just have to take your small steps. But yeah, the athletic director's got a challenge in front of them, just deciding what to do next. Like, do they go to a league where maybe they're more competitive and they couldn't be an NAIA school, but do they go there? Like, you know,
that's the hard conundrum there, because if you go, let's go NAIA, you got pounded on by the two NAIA schools that you played this season. So is that going to be any worse, or do we move down a division and continue to our losing streak? Because if that happens, then I don't think they'd ever get rid of the football program, because even though it makes so little money, that's like still the moneymaker at the school, and their basketball team is normally competitive in the conference. It's a very messy situation. They might just have to suffer, and that's unfortunate, because they were never a powerhouse, but like they were always that unknown team. Because every time that we were getting ready, I think when we were the year we finished 7-4, the last year with Eckler, we were getting ready for Fort Lewis, and then we were like, yeah, you know what? They're like 4-7, but they play everybody really, really tough. Well, their scheme is not even – their scheme is so difficult to try and understand. They're moving guys all over the place. Their D-line is never in the gap that they line up in. And, oh, they have a three-time All-RMAC nose guard who played at Rangeview High School over in the metro area and just got a D2 scholarship because he was 5'4". He's like 5'6". I'll give him that. He's like 5'6", but he could squat 800 pounds. So he would just be impossible to move. And you're like, they're unknown. They're scary. They can come in, and if you go out to Durango not ready to play, they're going to punch you in the mouth. And if they come into your place, they could beat you, because they beat us a couple times. I think I called one of the Skyhawks.
They beat Pueblo a couple of times just by being a feisty team, where I think you could always put Fort Lewis in the tier of teams like in Adams State, where neither of them complete, but Fort Lewis can identify as just being that tough physical defensive front. Adams State's always one of those teams where they can win 3 or 4 games a year because they could dump a flurry of points on you if you're not ready, or they could always hang their hat on something. So yeah. Fort Lewis has got to find something to hang their hat on, and which can maybe win them a few games here and there.
I guess for those bottom three teams, let's take out South Dakota Mines, because I think we both – I know that what they've proven so far is down, but they have a tough schedule early on in the season. We'll see if they're able to bounce back. But between Chadron, CSU Pueblo, Fort Lewis, and Adams, who do you think out of those teams that are currently winless in the conference and currently on the bottom half looking up at the top four, top five, out of those four schools, who do you think has the best shot to finish on a higher note and actually have somewhat of a successful season?
Well, it just feels like with the way that Pueblo has front-loaded their schedule with ranked competition and they're playing Mines and they're playing Western, they're playing all these favorites. I just feel like with how they front-loaded their schedule, it's likelier that as the schedule lightens up as the year goes on, they'll play their way out of it. And we're just here to see if South Dakota Mines has a backbone on defense to see if they can dig their way out of a slump. Whereas I was so high on them beforehand, like they still have the quarterback that they have, the transfer running back, and or Johansson, I'm remembering his name, but with also the transfer running back, in which they can do some things, but can they tighten up defensively? I expect Pueblo to build their way out of it simply because their schedule is going to get easier.
I think they're a good, smart pick. I don't know. I wanted to believe in South Dakota Mines. I wanted to believe in Chadron, and I never believe in Adams because I am – not only am I part of that rivalry, that rivalry was beaten into me – not beaten – that's a bad thing to say, especially on the internet. I never got beaten because I was a fan of Adams State, but here's what I'll say. I didn't know the town was pronounced Alamosa until I was about 10. It was always Asamola to me. But why does the wind come so hard from the east? Because Adams blows. That was what I grew up with. So as my dogs are starting to go crazy, but yeah, I think we're good too.
Heartbreakers against Adams during our time there. We just, for whatever reason, giving up the biggest comeback in Division II history, I think the year before you got there. Yeah. And then from those heartbreakers, that overtime matchup in 2018, it's not good looking back on that series and knowing that during my time there, we went 1-4 against them.
I hate talking about it with my dad because everybody that we talk about, like Highlands, we were 3-1 against them in my time. Okay, well, I think I beat them once. Chadron, we never lost to them. We only beat them once. Mesa, never lost to them. Well, we were the first team to beat them with in 20 years in Grand Junction. How about that? Do you have that on your resume? Don't show me your conference championship rings again. You've already showed me those too many times. I know you got three. I don't have one. Those guys have half of one. I know they have one now. They were able to win the share of the title. I think that's probably a good place for us to leave things off. I know that you said you may make an appearance on Talking the Gridiron Sunday night after the NFL slate on Variety Sports Network. If the Steelers game is going on a little bit too long, then you might just be in the comments, but we'd love to have you on. We had a ton of people in last week. Nico joined. Brian's been a trip, and he's going to be even worse now because the 49ers remained undefeated.
Man, that was a beatdown yesterday. I mean, Giants hung in tough at moments, but yeah, that was a beatdown.
No, it's insufferable, especially when my Bengals are winless and his team is undefeated because I can't say anything. 2-0. What are you
going now? You're coming in not even knowing if your quarterback's going to be playing next week. So
sorry, I drafted him in fantasy. And the worst part about that is that everybody at my school who drafted Burrow, because I wear my Burrow jerseys on Friday, everybody else who drafted him in their fantasy league tells me about it. It's like, oh, I had your boy in fantasy. He didn't look good. I was like, yeah, what do you want me to do? I can't text the guy and say play better. I just
showed
like
some signs last week, but you could tell he's battling an injury. Like, they started to look more like the Bengals defense as the game went on against Baltimore, but yeah, rough times. Meanwhile, over here in Pittsburgh, I'm just wondering, when is our offense going to start outscoring our defense?
So. It's not going to happen. But luckily for you, you have T.J. Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick. You have some guys that will score on defense, but you're going to have to score a lot on defense to be competitive. That's the unfortunate part. Be sure to follow Rev at Rev Coca. Said he didn't have any new articles coming out, but he does produce content, written content for Belly Up Sports. He's on this show. He's a contributor. Regular contributor on Talking the Gridiron. I will be back with everybody on Sunday in the morning for Sunday Scaries and then Sunday night for Talking the Gridiron after this weekend of NFL football. And we'll be back next Friday. Far End of the Bench drops on Thursday. So I think that's all of the plugs and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Reb, it was a good episode. I'm excited for another week because these guys, it seems, are going to continue to beat the crap out of each other, and I'm interested to see who comes out on top. And next week, we can be looking at a very different conference landscape.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm excited to see that. Definitely. Week one came out with a bang. We saw certain teams that we thought were going to be contenders kind of disappoint. We saw, you know, Black Hill State and Mesa make some statements, and really just excited to see the continuation of that. You know, who's going to keep shining? Is a team that we're looking down on going to make a statement and surprise us? You know, there's definitely an up and down nature with this conference. So I'm excited to watch it.
It's going to be chaos. We're going to be there with you every step of the way. Be sure to follow at FEOTB Pod. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're watching live. Be sure to subscribe, leave a like. This is where you can find all of my shows, Far Into the Bench, Sunday Scaries, Top of the Mountain. And then we also co-stream the Talking the Gridiron on this page. So if you subscribe, we appreciate you. Continue to follow. Follow Rev, like I said, at Rev Coca. We will see you guys next week after another weekend of Friday football, of RMAC football. But until then, have a good rest of your weekend. Enjoy watching all the football action, and Rev and I will be back with you next time.